You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
All right, we got a lot to get into this afternoon. Noodles not here today. Flew out to Vegas this morning. He's calling a game tomorrow night. Ottawa in Vegas tomorrow night. Then I believe he's taking the red eye home on Thursday night. He'll be back on Friday for Friday's show.
Why he would do that?
Why?
I know.
That is commitment to this program.
Dedication.
Dedication.
There's been times where I've watched him in Anaheim on the bench, like in the third period. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm thinking, that guy's going to be on overdrive tomorrow.
He'll be back on Friday after calling a game Thursday night in Vegas, of all places. That is commitment.
I think it's ridiculous.
That's captaincy type commitment, I'll be honest with you.
You know my move. If I'm away and I'm not coming in the next.
Yeah, and you're not doing anything when you go away. Me neither. I pulled that move many times.
I got a game in Vegas on Halloween with Montreal. My flight is at 1 p.m.
The next day. Yeah, you're not flying back in the red eye.
I could even make a 9 a.m. flight. I got to give yourself a little bit of time.
They shouldn't have that in Vegas anyway. There should not be any flights before noon out of Vegas. Although, some people are dying to get out of Vegas.
After a few days, you need to catch your breath.
Yeah. Like, I had a couple of buddies. Mike Johnson's in studio. We were down in Vegas in May. We went down for 2 days. We flew down on Friday. We were coming back on Sunday. It was a long weekend. It was May 2-4. And some other buddies who were staying down there as well, they were planning on coming back on Monday. And they booked the red-eye flight Sunday night because they said, I've had enough.
Tapped out.
Yeah. They did 2 nights already. They were looking at a 3rd night. They said, I can't do it.
Especially the flights are so late there. You can have your full day, full night.
Yeah.
Show, dinner, party, gamble, and then still catch a 1 a.m. or 4.
Well, you flew out on the red-eye.
Yeah. You guys stayed that extra Friday night, and I'm like, no way, man. We had 2 nights there. It's like, that's enough. We had 1 long day getting there. Getting there was ridiculous.
That was
Didn't
the
we
problem.
Have a 7-hour delay?
Yes, we had a 7-hour delay and then a 4.5-hour flight or whatever it is. So we had like a 13 or 14-hour travel day. When you think of when you left your
right.
door and
door
when you
door.
Checked into your room, yeah. It was a 14 or 15-hour travel day. It was basically we flew to Tokyo, right? So that put a bit of a damper on the first night.
That would put a little.
And we were pros. We were down there to work. We were down there doing shows and we had a wedding
to attend.
We
didn't do a whole lot. We went to one crummy, like, what was that place called? Like, Horseshoe in the Barrel or something.
But that was in the MGM. We never left the MGM. We went to the rink, the studio, the wedding chapel.
Yeah.
And that was about it.
Yeah.
It's all inside the same building.
We all stayed
The best
there.
Time I had was after the last day of work. Me and Mulz got creamed in the lobby bar. And then I had to go home.
And then you jumped on the plane and you went home that night. Yeah, exactly. So that's where Noodles is. Johnny's in here with us today. You were calling a game last night, right?
Montreal, Tampa last night.
And then you're calling another game tomorrow,
Montreal,
is that
Minnesota
right?
tomorrow night.
Ooh, Montreal, Minnesota.
That Minnesota.
Are you kidding
team.
Me? Do you know what I did on Monday?
Ottawa, Minnesota.
So.
It can't be worse than that.
You've been between the benches a lot.
Yeah.
That must have been one of the worst games you've ever called in your life.
Including exhibition. Probably the most boring, least eventful game ever. Two teams just trying to play defense, not creating anything. 1 p.m. start. Everyone was sleepy. It was.
Well,
some days
Ottawa's...
you do a game, and it's and you know you watch a game. You're like, okay, yeah, there's lots to talk about. And some days you do a game,
yeah.
And it is work trying to think of what are we going to talk about every whistle. That day was work.
Well, Minnesota is terrible. They are terrible.
You know what? And you watch them close.
They're old.
They're in trouble. All their best players, I guess, are older. Long contracts, not getting better. And not delighted to be there. You know, Parisi, it blooms off the rose there a little bit. He kind of talked in the summer about wanting to win and whether it's going to happen there. Eric Staal, who's been great since he's gotten there, his body language and his facial expressions
the whole
are
team,
not
like,
delightful.
This team sucks. And like Brucey Boudreaux, who we love, after the game, he's like, I wish I could make everybody faster.
Well, we've got the audio. Let's yeah. play this because Boudreaux wears his emotion on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't even furnace face. I mean, there's...
That shot's fired. Not at Billy Guerin.
That's at Paul Fenton.
Whoever has done that damage beforehand, because that team is... That's the worst team I've seen in 5 years.
Well, and Boudreaux knows he's in big trouble. Like, he's probably going to play it out because Guerin, there's no point in doing anything. Minnesota's terrible. They're not going to win anything. They got a bunch of old guys they have to find a way to get rid of. But here's what Bruce Boudreaux had to say. This is the coach of the team after the game last night.
Listen, I don't have the answer for that. I mean, it's what we have. So, I mean, they've got to play. I mean, it's I wish I had a magic potion to make everybody faster, but I don't. So, you know, you just got to – that's why you got to grind it out and you got to play maybe a boring hockey game. But, I mean, it's when you want to – you can't get in a end-to-end game with some of these speedy teams.
He's not wrong. I mean, nothing he said there was wrong. It's just the attitude. The mood is just so dour.
Resignation.
Yeah.
Like, this is weird.
It's almost like he doesn't deserve to get fired, but you almost have to fire him to say, we need a young guy in there who's super hyper and can somehow fake motivate. I don't know.
I think he'd be okay with being let go.
No kidding. That's a joke of a team. They got bad contracts. You know when James Duthie, who doesn't say boo about anybody, he's like, they're slow, they're bad.
Like, yeah, they're terrible. And when you look at who the Leafs have beaten, now you don't get to control your schedule.
This is not murderer's row they've been through.
It's Minnesota, Ottawa, Columbus, and Detroit. Those are their four wins. Those are four of the worst, you know, seven or eight teams in the league, in my opinion. I think Detroit, they're coming right back down to earth. I think they're going to be terrible.
Columbus, the only question mark. The other ones, you're right.
Yeah, but Columbus is a lot of turnover, and the mood down there isn't exactly exciting at this point. But they could surprise some people. But you play the schedule that is handed to you, and that leads into the game tonight. They got a back-to-back, and they're in Washington tonight. They got Boston here on Saturday night. So the next two games are true barometers to find out exactly what this Maple Leaf team is capable of doing. And I was looking at their schedule because I wanted to get a read on when Hutchinson was going to play. And based on what Babcock has always decided to do with his goalies, he plays the starter the first night, and the backup goes the second night. And he doubled down on it after the game last night and said it's important for Freddie to feel good about himself and for the team to be fresh in front of him. And that's, some important message to send to Freddie Anderson. So here's what you're looking at for Michael Hutchinson out of the gate. This is the guy I don't believe they wanted as their backup. I think Michael Neuwirth was the guy they intended on being their backup. This is the guy who was supposed to be playing with the Marlies. First week of the season, Freddie played at Columbus, so Hutchinson had to go up against Montreal. Mm-hmm. We all know how that played out. Wasn't necessarily his fault, but he was spotted a 4-1 lead. They lose 6-5. Freddie plays last night against Minnesota. Hutchinson goes tonight against Washington in Washington.
Yep.
Next Monday, they're at home against Columbus. Freddie will play that game. The next night, at Boston, Hutchinson will get that game. The following Friday, or later in that week, San Jose at home, Freddie will play that game on the Saturday night at Montreal. So your backup is going to start Montreal, Washington, Boston, Montreal. That makes no sense.
No, I don't care what his philosophy is. I think Mark Masters asked him about it last night in the pregame show. It's just like his theory of the centerman's got to be the first guy off for the line changes. Never once have me or Dave Poulin or him or you said, because they did that, that's a great thing. Look at what it did here. Look at what it created or look at what it prevented. Have you ever done? Have you ever said they changed the centerman for the first guy off? Last night it cost them a goal because Freddie Gauthier and Austin Matthews were looking around saying, who's going to the point? But this theory of, like, look at these games.
Freddie,
you want your best goalie, Freddie Anderson, playing those games.
I disagree.
You disagree?
Bird in the hand.
Take the points is what you're
saying. Take the win. Put your goalie, your best goalie, with the best opportunity to win. I mean, you could probably run the numbers. So if you play Hutchinson in the first half of those back-to-backs, is he going to win two of the four?
Well, against these teams, he should win four of four.
You should.
Well, look at who it is. It's Columbus, Minnesota, San Jose, Columbus.
So you think he's going to win all four?
He should. I mean, it's the NHL. Nothing's guaranteed. But
all those teams have been awful.
Yeah.
I'm of the mind of give the starter, not just to make the starter feel good about himself. I think you can get over that. You're a professional. Just play when you're supposed to play. But take the wins when you can get the wins and take your chance on the next one because wins are hard to come by.
But don't you consider...
Changing sentiment? We can have another conversation. But if I was running a team, unless it was a specific four-point game or there's some other extenuating circumstances, former team, send a message, whatever, I'm like, no, my starter will play the first game.
Okay, 9 times out of 10, if that's your philosophy, I don't agree with it, but I can understand it, and I'll say, okay, you're going to commit to it.
That's my thing. Like, my view is what we just expressed, but...
But here's the thing, though.
I get it. You want to get the slam dunk, go for it.
But I think you do have to apply context to this.
Mm-hmm.
The other game, if the second part of the back-to-back is a team in the Western Conference and, you know, Carolina, team in the other division. But in this instance, this month, you're looking at Montreal twice and Boston once.
Right.
Those are the teams you're fighting with all year. Mm-hmm. That's exactly who you care about. You need to get those points. Mm-hmm. And if you can't trust your backup or your team, furthermore, your team to be good enough to beat Columbus twice, Minnesota, and San Jose, and then set yourself up to be in a position to steal points against a team that probably should get you on the back-to-back, mm-hmm. teams that you're going to be fighting with all year, I could see why you'd go Freddie on the second half.
The first weekend's
a perfect example. That they handed 2 points to Montreal that should not have been handed away.
Johnny, what numbers are you running?
Well, just like
what are you?
I mean, if you think
Chad
about
Graff or whatever the guy's name is.
Ian Graff.
Yeah, I
mean, who loves the goat? You and the goat are on the same. You and him,
you
John Bellagoat.
Freddie starts the front half. He gets 3 of the 4 wins. Maybe Hutchinson can get 2. So you're getting 5 of 8. You flip it. Are you gonna get 5 of 8? I probably feel more comfortable getting 5 of 8 wins the first way. Now I'll beat better teammate, and maybe that'll factor in because there'll be teams we'll be chasing or competing.
But that's what I'm saying.
Taking points out of their bank.
Exactly.
But I'm taking the 5 of 8 the best I can. I'll worry about how the standings fall when we get down to the. And maybe when it's to March or April.
And this is very specific. It is very specific to October, right? Like this happens to be the case this month. So. I don't know if this is ever going to happen again the rest of the year.
It's so clean, right?
It is, and it's so in our face, and it's so bad team Montreal, bad team Boston,
right.
Bad team Montreal, bad team Washington.
Like maybe if your Hutchinson does a little something for your, I don't know if he cares, does something for his confidence in you. If you know, he knows he's not as good. He knows ideally he's not playing against the better teams, but in this situation, coach is trusting you. To play against Washington, trusting you to play against Boston.
Is he trusting him, though, or is he subjecting him? Is he saying you got to play?
Depends on how you want to interpret it.
That's my interpretation.
Yeah, but I'm thinking you could probably talk yourself into saying, yeah, if he's letting me take on the big guys. He must trust me. Maybe I'll feel good about myself.
Well, he's expected to win, right? Like, he's still a pro. You got, and listen, these are tough games. It's a back-to-back. You're going into Washington next week, early in the week. Boston, that's not going to be an easy game. It never is.
Back-to-back against those teams, you're hoping to get 2 of the 4 games? Regardless of who plays?
Mm-hmm. I still think they got to find a backup that they can trust to not play in this situation. We talked about it at the beginning of the year. Like, get a guy you can throw in there in a midweek game that's not a back-to-back and say, that's your night, that's your start.
I think Neuwirth was the guy they were hoping was going to do that.
And he unfortunately didn't want to play ice hockey, period.
Exactly. Which is
general
a bit
body
of a concern.
Soreness was an issue.
Yeah, bit of a concern when the guy doesn't want to play. But anyway, listen, last night, it's against Minnesota, but you'll take the win. And, you know, all day we talked about whether or not the big boys are going to be able to snap out of it. And Tavares got on the board. Marner had 3 points. Morgan Riley had 4 assists in a period.
Period.
1 period.
Some guys, that's a month. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
4 points if you're a fourth-line guy.
For a defenseman, too, to start racking up points like that.
He's had a quietly – Morgan Riley hasn't played great to start the season. That's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
But he is just racking up the points.
Who would you consider the greatest Maple Leaf defenseman of all time?
Boreas Salming.
I mean, I was too young to watch him play. I know I'm older than you, so you would be too, but I think that's who it would be. Yeah.
That's who I would say based on what every older Leaf fan tells me. You know, it's Salming, it's Tim Horton.
Right.
Bobby
Bond, whatever.
Yeah, you can go way
back from the 80s on forward.
Salming's a guy.
When did Salming retire? Early 80s?
I think. I think he played through the 80s or close to it.
Oh, really?
Because I heard Eddie Olczyk on with Cause yesterday, and Salming was still on the team in 93. So he had moved on from the Leafs, obviously, by then. I don't know where he finished his career. But,
I mean, he's getting Morgan up Riley there in the last 30 years. So you think Brian McCabe,
Thomas Caberle.
Dave Ellett was real good for a few years. I mean,
I love both those guys, but he's better than both of them.
Yeah.
Morgan Riley?
Yeah.
Yeah, we played with both of those guys, and I love them dearly. They're great players.
Yeah.
But he's better than both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the record book last night and what he established, and I remember us talking about this during the 100th season when the Leafs were unveiling the top 100 players of all time. And there's a long list of great players, but there isn't a Gretzky or a Lemieux or an Orr or a Howe, guys who are just, you couldn't catch them.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you do. Like, I don't think McDavid has a shot at ever being considered the greatest Oiler of all time. It's already been determined. You just can't. I'm not sure he can get in the top two or three. But I think the greatest Maple Leaf of all time, that is achievable. Someone can pass Dave Keon. As great as Keon was, couple of cups, Hart Trophy or two, all-time great, blah, blah, blah. And I think the defense...
Somebody in this group could do it.
Could do it. And I wonder if Morgan Riley, if Riley's here for another 10 years... Could he?
Yes. If he plays,
could he have
long?
That label? Could he have the greatest defenseman in team history label?
Only if they win. Like I think that will. He. I don't know if the individual.
I think he'd have
Morgan
to win
Riley.
And throw a couple Norrises in there.
And Norrises are harder to win now, though. There's so many more players.
So it's... what? You got to do it, Johnny. If you're going to be nominated as the best defenseman for the Leafs ever.
I don't think Salming ever won a Norris.
No.
Now he's fighting with some pretty.
Yeah,
good
we're
players,
also talking though. About an organization where there's only three guys that scored 50 goals. So it's not like we're talking about a bar that is off the charts.
That's right. Like, I think the one position that probably you can't get there is goaltending. But maybe. Like, Johnny Bauer, Terry Sawchuk,
it's so hard
Cujo.
To compare those things, but...
It is. Yeah. It's all generational, but...
He's got a chance.
He's got a chance.
He's got a chance.
Here for a long
he's
time.
In the right situation, on the right team, the right age, right guys around him. But I think he's got to win stuff. Whatever it is. Stuff. Olympic gold medals, individual awards, first team. He was on the second. Was he on the second team last year?
Yeah, he wasn't nominated for the Norris. So he must have been second or third. Yeah,
fifth in the Norris. Was, yeah, so he wasn't even second. So yeah, he's got a chance. But four assists in a period—that's productive. 20 minutes.
Not bad.
And you can kind of pack it in after that.
Oh yeah,
night.
The third is irrelevant at that point.
Exactly.
Wally Matthews will join us. He's been covering the Yankees for a long time. Game four is going to be postponed to tomorrow night. Pouring rain down in New York. Gerrit Cole pitched a gem again. His numbers.
Tell you what, I wouldn't give that money to Bryce Harper. I wouldn't have given it to Machado. But Hinch said it after the game. He's the best pitcher in the game, and his only competition is in the same locker room.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think SportsCenter last night, they put up a screen comparing the Bumgarner run. I think it was in 14. Mm-hmm. Remember when Bumgarner had that run?
Yeah,
that
was sick.
Disgusting. Cole's numbers are better.
This guy hasn't lost a decision.
19 decisions.
He hasn't lost since May.
Decisions, yeah.
Since May. But he's got an ERA in the playoffs of like 0.48 or something. Like, that's like Rivera-type numbers.
Yeah.
And this guy's giving you 7 or 8 innings every single game.
That's what's nice about the playoffs, too, watching this round. Starters are going deep. Not so many 4 or 5.
That's what the Nats did.
Yeah.
Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, they all went 10-plus strikeouts.
We'll see you in 7 innings. Give you 10 Ks and 130 pitches.
Yeah.
And 1 earned run against.
I can't imagine what kind of money.
Well, we looked at the numbers. Was it earlier in the week? That, like, David Price got 7 years. Can't remember what it was.
217.
Yeah. I got to think he's going to beat that.
Oh,
like, he's gotta,
God, yeah.
He's got to be looking at... 7 years, 240.
He's not that old, is he?
I think 29. He's 29, yeah.
Okay, so he's getting towards the upper end of the...
Scherzer got his big ticket at 30. Like, so he'll say, look at what Scherzer did, and Scherzer's still giving you that production.
Scherzer baseball's got... changed quick, though, about how they are treating older players.
It has. It has.
It started a couple years ago with J.D. Martinez.
And these guys hanging out there on good years, and all of a sudden they can't get long deals.
But certain teams will still find a way to pay. Like, look what happened today. Joe Madden.
And there's a handful of them.
Joe Madden bounced back quickly.
Madden bounced back real quickly. He just signed with the Angels, which is not a surprise. A lot of people thought that's where he was going.
Well, isn't he going to be a part of that process of bringing Cole to Anaheim?
I think so. And my understanding is they're paying him like $4 million a year. And
$4
million a year.
Madden?
Yes.
I heard they're paying him, I thought I heard him 12.
No, it's not.
That's over
3 years.
Oh,
No. He's making, I think,
the Jeff
4
Finger contract. I thought it was per year, not
yeah, there's a decimal that was missing
four.
There. But Alex Cora, who won a World Series a year ago, I think he's making like $800,000. So if Cora's making $800,000, Joe Madden's a great manager. How is he worth $4 million? I'm not sure Aaron Boone's making more than $1 million.
What?
I'm not sure he is.
I am stunned to hear this.
Yeah.
Baseball, with all the money in that sport, the managers don't make
I would almost guarantee you that Aaron Boone makes more than $1 million.
Well,
he wouldn't take that job for less than
I'm
that.
Surprised he doesn't make seven.
He doesn't. I
basketball
guarantee
coaches
that.
All make $10 million a year.
They make a fortune. Football
Hockey
coaches.
Hockey coaches make 2 to 6.
Yeah.
And it, baseball.
Baseball managers, they're.
With their $150 million payrolls.
It's because the front office has taken over a lot of the power.
Yeah, the decision making is kind of taken out of their hands. They run it by the math book. And,
absolutely. Yeah. Who do you want us? 1 through 9? What do you think we do in this situation? So their roles have been, or their value has been depleted based on that. But the point I'm making is if the Angels are still that desperate and they're like, we'll pay you 4 when we could get someone who's maybe not Joe Maddon but close for like $1 million, what do you think they're going to pay Gerrit Cole? Probably a lot of money.
That is $30
million. Yeah. Ray Ferraro coming up at 5. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Wally Matthews will help us take a look at baseball and what's going on in the ALCS. And the Nationals are off to the World Series, sweeping St. Louis. Mike Johnson's in here as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and up on TSN 4. All right, Wally Matthews coming up from New York, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. He'll join us in a few moments. Ray Ferraro in about a half an hour. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Mike Johnson's in here for noodles today. And we're going to be doing some poll questioning. We always do poll questions. We put a number of them up online. I think today we might have to do one involving Brooks Koepka. You guys see Brooks Koepka's comment?
Stirring it up again?
Yeah, so Koepka, I guess the whole golf world is basically over in South Korea right now. And he was asked about his rivalry with Rory McIlroy. And McIlroy just won the Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. And I think that factors into what Koepka is saying here because he comes off as a pretty petty dude. And he says what's on his mind, and he's not afraid to take jabs at people. But he was asked about his rivalry with McIlroy, and he said he doesn't believe there is a rivalry because Koepka's been out on tour winning majors for the past 5 years, and McIlroy has not won a major in 5 years.
He said there is no rivalry.
There's no rivalry.
I've been out for 5 years, and he hasn't won a major since I've been out here. There is no rivalry. But, hey.
I like it. I like it, man. I want to hate Brooks Koepka. I like this guy. I like the attitude, the swag. It's an unnecessary, ruthless comment, just like shutting down his girlfriend for that kiss before the fourth round at Bethpage. Mm. That was unnecessary. Could have just given her a kiss and walked off.
Not
he said no.
It.
No, I'm not doing it.
No.
I'm in my own kind of tunnel vision here.
My career, and even more so because it's so unlike golf. Golf, if there's ever a sport where, generally speaking, everyone gets
his
along.
His typical comment would have been, I have a ton of respect for Rory
McIlroy.
He's
a great player.
He'll win again.
I got to be at my best to compete with him. He's fantastic. Like, that's what you'd expect, even if you don't believe it. That's what most guys would say.
Yeah, they lie.
It's refreshing here. I'm like, nah, it's nothing to me. Now,
this guy came to a major championship and said, there's only 70 guys that can really compete, and basically out of those guys, 10 are really a threat. And I don't think they can beat me on a Sunday.
And then he won the tournament.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was at Bethpage.
Yeah. I mean, he almost choked it away on Sunday a little bit, but
I can't blame this guy because he walks the walk.
That's just
after
it.
Talking
now,
the talk, man.
When you talk the talk, you better back it up because you know the masses will be waiting in the wings for Rory to throw a 64 at him on a Sunday to win the Masters and be like, what do you got to say now?
Well, golf should be loving this. They should love
this
guy.
Yes.
Because of what you said, it's unique, it's different, it's going to shine a light on the golf world when no one's talking about golf right now. It's October. No one's talking about golf. But now I want to get to a major because I want to see Tiger play again, and I want to see Koepka and Rory, and the idea of them being paired at Augusta on a Sunday would be spectacular.
Yeah.
And this guy's made it clear. He couldn't care less about anything but 4 tournaments a year. He came up at the PGA Championship and said, I don't care if I hit putts.
Is that a default mechanism because he doesn't win any other tournaments?
He doesn't win a lot.
Like, when he wins, I think he's got, whatever, does he have 4 majors?
I think he went to the Canadian Open. He goes, I'm just trying to get some good swings in here. He could have cared less.
Yeah, he put forth that front, and McIlroy won that tournament.
But you know what I mean?
I think he's got 6 majors.
6 majors?
Now.
What does Rory have? 5?
Does Rory have the slam now? No, because he hasn't won the Masters yet.
But they're very close. The point is, like, if you don't win something, you don't win any regular tournaments. You win majors. It's easy to say, I just care about the majors.
Yeah, but
because it
majors,
makes yourself look.
But they're so clearly bigger.
Well, what, you don't care about players?
I guess not.
Apparently not.
That's what he's saying.
You don't care about FedEx?
I like it.
Oh, you're a golf nut. Rory at his very best. Brooks at his very best. Is there a guy who's better?
I honestly think that Brooks Koepka at his best, because I think he putts better.
Right. Rory hits the ball better than anyone at his best. His swing is better than anyone.
He hits a 330 in the air on the fly. And
but he putts better. That's all.
I think Koepka, under the gun at a major, he just putts better.
Yeah, he's money.
I'm with you.
He is money.
You want to root against him, but you kind of gotta respect him.
Yep. Today's poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. So, in light of Koepka's comments regarding his rivalry or denied rivalry with McIlroy, do you love him or do you hate Brooks Koepka? Again, today's poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. Custom team uniforms and logos at prices to suit any budget. Play like a pro. Look like a pro. JerseyFactory.com. So we're talking about Joe Maddon getting hired by the Angels, and we believe he's making about $4 million. I don't think Aaron Boone's making much more. I'm not sure he's making $1 million. Just based
and
on what
I'm
Alex Cora is making.
Be over that.
All right.
He's making what DJ Smith is making in Ottawa, is what you're telling me?
I don't think DJ Smith's making $1 million.
No, I know. You're saying they're both making 700.
I don't even know if he's making 700. Do you
Canadian.
Think he's making 700?
Canadian.
Canadian, exactly. Here's Wally Matthews, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. Do you know how much money Aaron Boone is making?
More than me.
Okay.
Do you have any kind of number?
A little bit over $1 million. A little bit over $1 million. But listen, what is a manager these days but just like a middleman between the GM and the players anyways? I mean, how much do you have to pay him? You know, how much are they really allowed to do?
Well,
do the players look at him that way? Do the players, has the way the players look at the manager changed?
Honestly, I don't know whether they concern themselves with where the orders are coming from. But, I mean, obviously, look, I spent most of the year covering the Mets where, the GM was texting the manager during the game when to make pitching changes. So, obviously, the role has changed. You know, you're basically an errand boy for the GM in a lot of places. I don't think it's quite that bad with the Yankees, but I think that's one of the reasons why Girardi's not here anymore, because I don't think he's going to serve as anybody's errand boy, and that's why I think it's pretty much a long shot that he winds up with the Mets. But, I kind of think the days of, like, the $5 million celebrity managers might be coming to an end. I'm actually surprised that, that Maddon got hired. I look at guys like him, Girardi, Showalter, Dusty Baker, they're dinosaurs. They're not the guys that these GMs want anymore.
Well, that's it. And that's what we were talking about, that Maddon, full credit to him, get as much money as you can. He was getting paid a fortune in Chicago, and they're not going to complain about it.
He's a great front man for a team. He really is. I mean, I dealt with him quite a bit when he was in Tampa, and he's just a terrific guy to deal with. And, I can't say that about every manager that I've covered.
Is his number one priority is trying to get Cole there after the season's over and it's all said and done to help him in the recruiting process?
But again, you get into the realm of somebody else. You know, managers would love to have everybody. It's not their money, and GMs would love to have everybody. It's always up to ownership. And we've been through this with the Mets quite a bit here. We've been through it with the Yankees. And of course, a GM would covet everybody. GMs would love to have signed, Machado, Bryce Harper, Patrick Corbin. They'll like to sign Garrett Cole. It's all up to how much their bosses are willing to spend. So, how much influence Joe Maddon's going to have on personnel decisions, I really have no idea.
So the game is postponed. Game 4 is tomorrow night at Yankee Stadium. Does that help or hurt the Yankees?
I think it hurts them because, look at the amount of relief pitching they've used in the first three games. I mean, they basically use five pitchers a night. Boone hasn't been willing to go very long with his starters. And he's been having to go get 15 to 20 outs. He needed 21 outs out of his bullpen the other night, when Paxton started. So you just wonder if that's sustainable when you're going to play four games in a row. I don't think that helps. I mean, Tanaka has a pretty good track record of giving them some length. But, he yanked Paxton after 2 1/3 innings the other day. Severino, struggled to get through five innings last night. And he's probably, going to have to pitch game 7. I'm not real sure that they would even try him on short rest if game 6 is a must-win game. I think that there's a couple of quandaries for them, but one of them is the fact that they lost the off day on Friday, which I think was vital for the bullpen.
with Wally Matthews, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. So my understanding is Yankee fans, and I don't want to paint every single one of them with the same brush, but now all of a sudden...
Oh, go right ahead. Go right
okay,
ahead.
Okay, I will. They're all complaining that the balls aren't juiced anymore. Like, is that the story? I saw that with the New York Post this morning. Like, how stupid is that?
I think I just broke a rib laughing.
But isn't that true?
That's hilarious. I don't know. I don't do those fan in the stand stories. But
I'm telling you, man, the New York Post was writing about it this morning. The Post was openly complaining about the juice balls.
I fully understand that. This all has to do with Didi Gregorius not being able to get the ball out of the shortest right field
right, exactly.
in the American League last night. It's amazing because, you know, when somebody hits one into the first row of the right field seats against the Yankees, everybody complains the park is too small. And when the Yankees hit 306 home runs, half of which, you know, would be flyouts anywhere else, everything is just fine. So I put very little stock into what Yankee fans say about the baseball.
Well, they're loud, man. There's a lot of them. You know that.
Yeah,
well.
There are a lot of them, and they are loud.
Yeah. And, hey, their team's always in the playoffs, so... But Houston was playing with the same baseballs, as far as I know, last night.
I did not notice them changing baseballs.
I don't think they did.
Came up.
Yeah, I don't think they were trying to hook up Altuve.
As I recall,
they hit two last night. That's right.
Yes, they did, and they were pretty long.
Yeah, they looked juiced.
They got the tight round one for that one.
I mean, God, I'm scared to death of Josh Reddick and who's the other kid with
Altuve hit it.
Altuve, the little guy.
Yeah, Altuve knocked one out.
Not need juice in the baseball.
That's right. Do you think the Nationals have a shot? You think the Nationals can win a World Series or what?
I do. I actually was very impressed with the Nationals. And, you know, I saw quite a bit of them early in the season against the Mets, and it looks like a different team now. I mean, they can hit. The pitching is good. And it looks to me like Bryce Harper might have been addition by subtraction. You know, I mean, this is a team that lost what was supposedly one of the best offensive players in the game and actually became better for it. So, yeah, I think they're a dangerous team.
Hard at all for baseball players to stay sharp with what they're going to have a week plus off. They're creatures of habit and rhythm.
You should mention that because the Yankees had almost a week off after sweeping the Twins, and I haven't heard that yet as an excuse.
Oh, you know, come up.
It really is not going to fly when Gerrit Cole pitches the way he did yesterday and when, you know, Verlander shuts them down a couple of days ago. It really, it's tough to, and especially when you've come out and won the first game 7-0, it's impossible to really make that argument here in New York. But, I mean, it depends. If they play poorly in the beginning of the World Series, that will be the reason. If they play well, it will not be a factor.
Right. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Wally.
Hey, anytime, guys. Take care.
This is Wally Matthews, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports.
I don't know. Feels like the balls are not flying out as much. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, it's colder, man. It's October. The wind's coming in out of right field. Yankee fans are going to complain about what... If they lose, there's a complaint.
Right.
It's not just that Garrett Cole's
they got
a beast
good pitchers,
and
not
Houston's
a good enough
better.
Reason.
Yeah. He's right. I mean, that Gregorius, off the bat, it looked like it was out.
Yeah. How many teams have you seen mash their way to a World Series win? When's the last time you could remember? Like, I'm not talking about clutch hitting, like, just saw, like, mash their way like the Yankees did.
Like, without pitching, too? Is that what you're saying?
Anyway, you don't mash your way to a World Series win.
No, you need more than that, clearly. And you need
notice
pitching.
Notice the narrative's changing into Scherzer, Strasburg.
At the very end, it's about the pitchers.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what the Nats.
162, you can stack your lineup and wear teams out in their fourth and five starters in the middle of July.
Yeah.
But when you're getting the best of the best, of the best staffs, the pitchers are still better.
Well, and that's why I think the postponement, it depends on which way. You could sell it both ways.
That was interesting
ways.
How he took that, though, because they're going to lose a day off, so hurt their bullpen because they'll need the rest because they're going to have to use it so much, as opposed to, you know, getting an extra day off.
Well, now what I think it sets up for, too, is if Houston can win tomorrow night, Verlander goes out for game 5.
Yeah.
And on full rest. So now you're looking at Verlander, the king himself, at Yankee Stadium, chance to win a World Series. That is dangerous,
you'll
man.
You'll like that spotlight.
Or chance to go to a World Series. But that's the kind of spotlight he'd be looking for.
Yeah.
And or you hold back on him and you go back to Houston with Verlander game 6, seven. Gerrit Cole game 7. Or you pitch him in 5. If he loses, you go to Cole in 6 at home with an equal chance to win. I mean, Houston is probably sitting there thinking, we got a real opportunity here. And they should. They're up 2-1.
Makes game four supremely important.
The Yankees have got to win tomorrow. They have to win tomorrow. You go down 3-1, and you got to go through Verlander and Cole. You're done. It's not going to happen. Ray Ferraro in about 20 minutes. Jerry's percentage is at 530. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, October 22nd will be a historic night down at Scotiabank Arena. Not only will the Raptors open their season at home, but they will be lifting up the NBA championship banner into the rafters, and we've got a pair of tickets to give away to that game, and we'll be doing so on Friday. So here's how you can win. Every day this week, we will be naming an NBA champion Raptor of the day. And on Friday, when we give you the cue to call, if you call in with all five names, you're going to see the game opening night. Zion Williamson, Pelicans in town.
That guy looks legit. Not surprisingly,
he's
tearing apart preseason.
Yeah, I'm going to be down there on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to it because I want to see the history.
How much is this game going to translate, though, Zion's? I mean, it's not a dunk game anymore.
No, he is pure athleticism. Like, he's a smart player, clearly.
Can he even shoot it from the perimeter at
all? No,
he's not.
He's
made a couple threes in preseason.
He's not going to be someone they target.
More than Ben Simmons.
Yeah, but everyone has hit more threes than
Ben
Simmons.
Ben's got one now against the Chinese team.
Against the Chinese team in the preseason.
Yeah,
I think he's going to have to work on his game. He's still raw. He's a raw talent.
I think he's athletic enough. He'll get you 20-10 for sure.
He's a tweener, though. He's not 6'11", 7 feet.
Yeah, but nobody is anymore. Power forwards are all 6'8". Draymond Green's a power forward. LeBron James a power forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's as big as the biggest guys. There's not many centers anymore.
Oh, he's a monster.
He's thick. He's
I look at him, I'm like, you got a little bit of Guerrero Jr. in you.
Yeah.
He's going to have to stay active, to stay svelte.
Well, he was out of shape. Remember when he played in rookie league? He showed up in Vegas. He played a quarter, and they basically said, that's enough. You're done.
Yeah, blow through another shoe.
Yeah, because he looked really out of shape. Yeah.
He blew through his underpants, not his shoes.
Well, because from the draft up until then, man, he was doing the media tours.
Having the time.
He was signing with Nike, I believe. He had a lot of things going on. He showed up in Vegas, and he was not ready to play. But there's a couple of Raptors who do not appear ready to play either. And I'm not surprised that Nick Nurse... You got to believe Nick Nurse is a little bit bitter, a little bit jaded, even though he won a title. He won a title, but Kawhi left. And so did Danny Green. Danny Green started every game. He played a lot of minutes. Yes, he faded late in the season, but he was a guy that you could rely on. Perimeter defense.
Constant. Yeah.
Veteran guy. Hit the big shot when need be. And Kawhi is Kawhi. Arguably the best player in the world. Effectively the replacements. Not based on what the lineup's going to look like, but contract-wise, they signed Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Mm-hmm. So these are two guys who are expected to come in, you know, be somewhere in the rotation. They're not going to be starting. They may not play a ton of minutes, but the expectation is they're going to show up and fill a jersey, and at some point they're going to have to play. So Josh Lewenberg was down there doing the scrum today and was kind of leading Nurse into a situation where I think Josh was waiting for Nurse to pump these guys' tires up. Because they're known as defensively minded players, athletic bigs, you know, that can play the wing position, maybe the power forward position, and hopefully give you some perimeter defense, move around, they're agile, et cetera, et cetera. Here was the back and forth, and you guys as former athletes, you tell me how you would receive this message from your new head coach.
Has it helped in terms of that defensive mindset that you've brought in? Defensive minded guys, so in addition to the guys that have been here that know the identity, it's also got Rondae and Stanley.
Those guys have not understood A, how hard we play, B, our schemes, that defense is a priority for them, etc. We got some work to do with all that crew. I tell them there's a couple spots. You know, come Tuesday night, there's a couple spots there open if somebody wants them.
That's code for A, out of shape, B, just not paying attention to detail, and C, I don't want to play you at all. So I'll look any other avenue to put somebody else on that floor. That's coach speak for what was just said there.
Mm-hmm.
That is a shot across the bow, and clear. You are moments away from being out of the rotation for sure.
For sure.
Maybe off the team, down to the whatever, Wave, G League, who knows, whatever, but... And that was, I don't know, maybe that's also Nick Nurse trying to tell his whole team, like, we got to buy back in because we're not going to be able to score quite so much.
Yeah, I think there's a part of that, but it would have been different if he was like, you know, Kyle, let's go, man. We're going for it again.
Yeah.
And I don't want Pascal Siakam to think he can be complacent. Let's go. These are guys like the ninth guy in the rotation, tenth guy in the rotation, and effectively, again, contractually, the replacements for Kawhi and Danny Green.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything in the offseason. This is who they brought in. They didn't do anything. They had guys walk on them, but I've heard Nick Nurse, he's a pretty honest guy, but that was something. He was waiting for someone to bring that up, too. I think he was waiting for someone to bring those two up in particular.
He had that reaction bottled up.
He has a good relationship with Jay Lou. He just said, hey, by the way, fire me a question about the newcomers.
Yeah, and I'll Stanley have a little, and Rondé.
I'll have a quotable comment for you.
I think Rondé's Twitter game is strong, though. It's full of positivity and good messages.
Well, that's great, man. That'll get you retweets and likes. It won't get you on the court. Like, the best, the mic drop of all mic drop for coaches is, I keep telling people, there's two spots available. Who wants to take it? As if it's an open tryout. It's
open run.
Yeah, anyone can show up.
That means he hates everyone that's trying to get
that
spot.
There are no viable options that he likes.
He hates it. And this is not July and August. We're less than a week away from opening night.
It's also playing the role a little bit, being a coach of a champion, and you can do that.
Lean on the new guys.
That's not the way we roll here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, but it holds more weight if it's the carryover veteran guys.
Sure.
Like if Marc Gasol, hey, I saw you partying all summer, Mark. I know you're a vet, but let's go.
Yeah.
I think that permeates the group a little bit more than Stanley Johnson taking the job.
Specifically, individually.
Nope. Just so rattled with the two of them.
Get me out of here.
Good luck with those guys come opening night. And it's a long season, you know, and they got to find a new rotation. Like we said, Kawhi and Danny Green took up a lot of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, load management was a thing, but when they played, those two were on the court like 38 minutes a night. So who's going to find those minutes? It's not all going to be Fred VanVleet playing, you know, sharing a backcourt with Kyle. And,
right.
OG Anunoby, who had a really tough year last year, can he build on
I think he's a lot of promise? He's probably the most important player on the team. Because the role he's playing. He's got to fill something he's not shown himself able to do yet.
Right. Yeah, we think we know what we're getting out of Siakam.
Yeah, Siakam's more important, but as far as like wild card, who's going to make or break this team?
Yeah.
OG's more that guy.
I would agree with that. I think Norman Powell has to prove he can be consistent again, too.
Hit an 18-footer.
He's in a very similar spot. Ray Ferraro coming up at 5:05. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.